All right, they got an Erev Shabbos. Kiddush. Okay, so in this week's parasha, we have all of the makas. Or not all of the makas, but a good part of the makas. And what's interesting is to note that Moshe Rabbeinu warns the Mitzrayim again and again about the makas. And you know, when you have, sometimes if you warn a person, you have this guy who... he warns, back in 2012, he warned everybody that the world is coming to an end. He had thousands of followers worldwide, and his prediction of September 2012, it didn't come true. And lo and behold, September came, September went, and he's quickly like fumbling and trying to say, you know what, maybe we made a mistake. He had all over the world, thousands of followers, people who were lying down in bed waiting for the end of the world, and lo and behold, it didn't come true. So he quickly tried to make it up. Oh, I miscalculated, and it's happening in March. Already he lost tons of people. By the time March came around, he recalculated again. And eventually he committed suicide. So you have these people who make major predictions and it doesn't come true. I understand why their second time around you're not going to believe them. But in this case, Moshe Rabbeinu is spot on for the first five of the Makkos. And yet the Torah says, and Moshe Rabbeinu comes along, he warns people about Barad, get your animals out of the field, there's going to be a massive hailstorm like that the world has never seen before. And people don't take him seriously. You got to be crazy. Who is not taking him seriously? Says the Medrash, it was talking about Moshe, Bilam. Bilam was the person who didn't take him seriously. And I saw several people make the ha'ara that it's very interesting. Bilam is the same person who in Parshas Balak goes ahead and gets message after message after message to, you know, it might not be a good idea to curse Klal Yisrael. Hello, you have a talking donkey. And yet Bilam does not put two and two together. Like, if I go and curse Klal Yisrael, then maybe I actually will get what I want done. I have a talking donkey? No. I, Hashem, who you actually know has some power, is telling you that it's not a good idea. But you never know. And he doesn't take things seriously. And in fact, the Chofetz Chaim points out that throughout the entire Parsha's Balak, there are no breaks in the entire Parsha. You know why there are no breaks, says the Chofetz Chaim? Because it is referencing what, and it's a remez to the way Bilam ran his life. Never stopping to think. Always going on a pre-programmed mission. Exactly what I was doing, I will continue to do. I will not adjust my path based on new information, based on maybe having a Musar Seder once in a while. And maybe I'm not going on the right path. It's possible that if there's a talking donkey saying something to me, that maybe I'm doing something wrong. But no, Bilam doesn't stop to think even for 1 second. And that's the same Bilam in this week's parasha who goes ahead and doesn't take Moshe Rabbeinu's message seriously that maybe there's Barad coming. No, who cares? The fact that he's been 5 for 5 already doesn't mean anything to me. And therefore, Bilam didn't take it. What we see about Bilam is that he doesn't stop to think. And because, you know, every now and then throughout life, you have to go ahead and readjust your direction, just making sure you're doing the right thing. Am I being the Jew that I need to be? Am I reacting properly in the office? Am I acting properly in the office? Do I have a sufficient gedarim with the females in my office? Do I have sufficient gedarim with the males in my office? Are my jokes clean enough? Am I a person who is a nice person? Am I davening good? Is my relationship with my wife good? Is my relationship with my kids good? Is my relationship with other people good? How's my learning? If you don't think about your life every now and then, you're just going to keep going and going like Bilam. And even though there might be stark messages that, hey, if you were to add two and two together, then, you know, you have these alcoholics. Hey, you know what? If you were to take life and realize that let's add up the points over here. Your wife hates you. Your kids don't talk to you. Your boss is threatening you with, you're on your third DUI in a week. Maybe there is a drinking problem, but no, people do not take their messages because they don't stop and think. And that's exactly who Bilam was. Continuously going on the same path without stopping to think. Now, if I may reference every single mashal, reference current events, you know, every single mashal, not every single, but a lot of the mashalim that we have in Klal Yisrael have to do with a prince and a king and the prince leaving the palace and everything like that. Well, you know, this is actually playing out right now in current events where we have one of the last real princes in the world. He has decided and opted out of voluntarily leaving his title of being Royal Highness, giving up all the money and all the wealth that comes with it, all the honor. He's leaving just because. Why? Well, it has to do with the relationship with an American actress. Now, He has not asked me for Shalom Bayis and for all tips. And for all I know, there's a lot of other reasons why he wants to leave the palace. Maybe he doesn't get along with his father, with Charles. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe there is other issues. But the first thing I would bring up with him, if he were to ask me my advice, is, are you sure you are doing the right thing? Because I don't know about you, but I think the average marriage to an American actress lasts maybe 75% of the time they break up, right? So how long does the average marriage to an American actress last? And you're giving up willingly the position and all the honor. You're going into debt. Now, I know, of course, they can make back their money. And yes, all it takes is one book deal. They're going to make $50 million. Of course, they'll make back their money. But are you sure you want to give everything you have up just for a marriage that has a 75% chance of failure? That's a very big percentage. So here's another person. Again, maybe he is thinking, but I just want to point out that this is something that I would speak about. And once we're on the topic, I want to explain what is the pshat that 75% of those marriages don't work out. You see, in a marriage, that the relationship that a marriage you're supposed to have is a marriage is supposed to be that I am there for the other person and we are becoming one. That person I'm going to respect, I'm going to love, and I'm going to make them part of me. You don't love yourself any less if chas v'shalom a person would lose their right hand. Imagine a person loses his right hand. Is he going to love himself any less? You don't love yourself any less because unless there's something wrong with you, a person could get sad, but very few people commit suicide. I mean, people sometimes go through a mild depression after having such a loss, but at the same time, most people quickly recover and they don't love themselves any less because they lost something so major in their lives, i.e. their right hand. So too, if a person goes ahead and marries the other person, when you become married, you become one to the point that no matter what the other person would lose, you would still love them. That is a very hard level to get to. That's called unconditional love, because a person loves themselves unconditionally. To go ahead and to become one with another person and to love them no matter what, to love them because the Rebbeinu Shalom put us together and we are going ahead and building a family unit come what may, that is a hard level to get to. But that's what we strive for. That is what a Yiddish marriage, and truly all marriages, but that's what a Yiddish marriage strives for, to go ahead and to become one with the other person. Now, when you have other things in the mix, for example, you have a situation where there is a multi, sometimes billion-dollar situation. You have covered of the likes that we don't understand. We have hundreds of photographers of paparazzi going after you wherever you do. And when there's a marriage, you understand. You see, when they get married, there's paparazzi everywhere. We've never been in a situation where you have hundreds of people trying to snap a picture of us. The maximum we could. I'm saying maybe by the gedolim, there's epis something like that. But it's on a level that we don't comprehend. So that type of situation, that type of covered, and of course there's the looks, and of course there's so all these other things start to turn the focus away from the loving of the actual person, and instead you start to go ahead and marry the person for the things that you're getting, the covered, the looks, the money, and memela. You lose the sight of the fact that there's a more global situation going on over here. I want more of a real, a marriage which involves me extending myself rather than getting more. I'm not loving myself more. You see, the more that the other person comes with, the stronger the chashash for falling and failing the marriages. Because the more you get, the more that's coming in, the more that you're focused on yourself, I'm getting more covet now, I'm getting more money, I'm getting better looks now. And memela, when those things stop, there's a bigger chance for a failure. Therefore, the Hollywood marriages, which come with such a price tag attached to them, they have a much bigger chashash for falling apart. Because when those things stop, you start to feel bad. Hey, what happened to all the paparazzis? Well, after a month, they stop taking pictures of you. I mean, they don't stop entirely, but the level stops. And therefore, memela, a person starts to feel bad. Maybe I should start another marriage. Maybe I should start, hey, if I go and look at her, then maybe the paparazzi will start again. Maybe there's more money there. Maybe there's better looks there. You get used to these things. And that is why these marriages fall apart. That's all by the way. But getting back to our issue over here of people who don't think. So again, that would be the first thing I would bring up with Prince Harry if he were to come over and say, hey, you know, do you think I should do this? But,
But this is the type of lesson that Bilam was. This is the type of person that Bilam was. A person who doesn't stop to think at all. And he does things without thinking. So you wanted the connection again to Harry was, the pshat was that I think he's doing something without thinking. But again, like I said, that's a specific example. Maybe there are other things that we don't know, and probably there are. But how does that apply to us? We have to go ahead through our lives and think through our lives, not just go ahead and act and continue our lives. And an excellent time for that is during Shemayna Esrei. During Shemayna Esrei, during every single bracha, you are talking to Hashem. Shemayna Esrei should not be a speed read, a type of tefillah that you just rip through as fast as you could. Shemayna Esrei should be a time of a connection to Hashem. And during that time of connection, you think about things. Like during Hashiveinu, if you think of Hashem, please help me come better, then you think of maybe I can improve over here, maybe I could tweak this, maybe I could adjust my life in a manner that it will be improved, and therefore you see parts that you can be improved. Salach lanu, and then you say Rafa'enu, and Hashem, you start focusing on somebody else's pain. Hashem, can you help that person? Hashem, can you help me? And then Baruch Elinu, Hashem, can you help this person with money? Can you help me with money? You focus on the world. You focus on different things that you can help. You focus on different people. That is a time for introspection, and that will memela help you adjust your life every second. You will not be like Bilam. You will not be like a person like Prince Harry, just doing things that is not. You have not. Let's focus on Bilam. You won't be a Bilam person. You won't be a person who goes ahead and makes zero adjustments. You won't be an alcoholic, somebody who is completely addicted to being himself. You'll have to have those minute adjustments throughout the life. Back in Ella's mind, we suggested that you go ahead and add a minute to your Shemayna Esrei of private time. Of course, that you should keep that up. But know that even during the regular Shemayna Esrei, there's so much time to connect to Hashem. This is not a time that you race through davening. This is the best therapy session a person can have. A time of introspection, a time of re'ev anir. Every single second of the Shemayna Esrei, you know, if you don't understand every word, then say it in English. And even still, add on English to every part of the tefillah. Hashem, please, can you help me get out of this situation at work? My boss is such a jerk. Can you help me get out of it and help me succeed over there? And then you start to think, maybe this, maybe that. And then Rafa'inu, Hashem, can you help this person? He's such a good person, and help him get out. Help him, help him with his tzaras. And Baruch Aleinu, and all the brachas that a person has. Shema Kaleinu, you can ask for whatever you want. I just heard from Reb Chaim Kanievsky. Somebody asked Reb Chaim Kanievsky, where should I daven? I want to daven for a shidduch. Should I daven in Amuka or should I daven in Meiron? And Reb Chaim Kanievsky answered, daven in Elikai Netzor. That's where you should daven. So that's the situation. That's the type of place where a person goes ahead, and a person should focus on Shemayna Esrei, becoming a better Yid that way. We should have all a great and uplifting Shabbos. Have a great one, everybody. Say.